Welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron, at Matt Aaron on Twitter, the Matthew Aaron Show on Facebook, on iTunes at the Matthew Aaron Show. So you can follow us at all those places. TheMatthewAaronShow.com, which is a little bit under construction, but all our shows are there. And the number one place lately to follow us is Spotify. So if you are a Spotify user, The Matthew Aaron Show. You type it in and you have 200 and I believe 77 episodes or 78 episodes at your disposal. Today is going to be a hopefully educational episode. We're going to have investigative reporter Lisa Guerrero from Inside Edition on the show. Lisa Guerrero is... she is one of the most famous syndicated reporters in the world. So Inside Edition is seen by everybody. And she's also done some interviews that have been seen by like hundreds of millions of people. So Lisa Guerrero's coming on in a couple minutes. But I'm going to also bring on a favorite of ours, Julia Gray, and I'm going to bring on Julia Gray because Julia is a political aficionado. She's kind of a political junkie. I feel weird calling it junkie, though, following something as serious as politics. But Julia is going to be joining me in a moment. You can follow Lisa Guerrero on Instagram and on Twitter at @4 Lisa Guerrero, and that's G-U-E-R-R-E-R-O, Guerrero. So we will call Lisa in a moment, or she will call us, and I'm going to give Julia a call right now. And hopefully you've been enjoying all these shows in your quarantine, in your, that's what we're doing these for, not seeing a dime out of this. So I'm trying to give you guys something to do that is going to give you some company, make you feel less lonely during this crazy, crazy historical situation that we're living through. I'm going to call Julia right now, and let's see how she's doing before we hear from Lisa. And let's see if I can get Julia's number correct here. See if she's not going to recognize the number from a third-party phone. So sometimes people don't even answer when I do this. So that's fun. Hello.
Hello.
Julia, it's Matthew Aaron.
Hello, man.
I was just telling everybody that, I need to have you on to... bring some intelligence from the question side of the table for someone like this, like Lisa Guerrero. And we're going through this like historical, I just did Julia's podcast for people that aren't aware. I did Julia's podcast, which you could find on Patreon. Is there a plug for that, Julia? Where can we exactly find it on
Patreon? I gotta start getting it up again.
So okay.
Speak. It's called Unresting Space. And it's on Patreon. Yes.
Yes.
It's pretty fabulous.
Yes, and I just did it
I have to grab some more guests. That's what I got to do. Well, because I like to do like kind of like a stream of consciousness. Like when you were on, we did like it was fun. It was really fun.
Well, it was the day after Super. It was the day after Super Tuesday, and so this was recent.
Yep.
This was earlier this month, and we had no idea what to expect. Like a week later.
No.
No. And here we are.
I mean, because I had like a whole list of things I wanted to do and subjects I wanted to talk about with different guests. And it's all been thrown. The coronavirus has just totally fucked everything up.
There's nothing else to do. There's nothing else to talk about. This is,
I know
we're living through a very historical period of time. If any time you think of first of all, in our lifetimes, we've never been quarantined. Right there alone, this is a serious situation. And we're going to talk to Lisa about that in a few minutes. But what are you doing to get through your quarantine right now?
Let's see. I'm doing a lot of organizing, cleaning. I'm doing some writing. I have, I'm jotting down like possible, possible story ideas for,
sure.
I don't know, like say if HBO calls me up one day and says, you know what, we really want to work with you. Sure. So stuff like that. I mean, just because there's not much you can do. And I'm in the city. I'm up in West Ridge, which is considered Little India. So this neighborhood is incredibly diverse and it's usually bustling with people and it's dead. It's so quiet. But other than that, that's it. I'm just sort of chilling out. I'm talking to friends. I'm using that silly Marco Polo app.
Oh yeah. I've not
really
tried.
Fun. Yeah, that's really fun.
I've not tried it.
It's really fun.
Maybe I need to get that.
So I'm talking to a lot of people.
Lakefront was bustling today. It's of course 50 degrees, which is summer in Chicago. So people were like, oh my God, it's 50 degrees, Corona what? And they all went to the lake. And I have a friend, and it's kind of funny when people tell you this because they're also admitting that they're not following these social distancing guidelines. And my friend was like, oh, I've been going to Montrose Harbor every day. And at first I'm like, wait, you have? Oh. I'm like, you have? And he's like, yeah, it was real quiet the last few days. And today it was packed. You couldn't get a parking spot. And
oh my God.
Oh yeah. So do not be shocked that the next step Chicago takes is Miss Lightfoot, our mayor, Lori Lightfoot, is going to shut down the beaches. It's coming.
I did see a breaking news alert from I think it was the Sun-Times saying that she was like, okay guys, all right, you keep this up, I'm gonna close the parks and the lakefront.
Yeah.
And you know what? Honestly, more power to her.
Well, yeah, sure. I'm just wondering why she already hasn't. Like, why are we leaving it out as an option?
I don't know. I'm thinking that she's trying to do the political thing and trying to, obviously this is very serious, but don't totally panic. If you go out, keep a distance. But I saw some of the footage or some pictures along of people walking along the lakefront near Ohio Street Beach, and it's between North Avenue, and it's like, people, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
It almost looked like a summer day because there were so many people out.
Well, and I'm gonna ask Lisa about this, but my fear is and I want your opinion on this before we talk about with Lisa. My fear is after these new Gallup polls that came out where Trump has been a 60% approval rating over this coronavirus.
Right.
I think maybe people are taking this less and less seriously. Like they think they're protected.
Yeah.
Like it's not a big deal. Lisa, I believe, is calling in. So let's take the call. Julia Gray's here with me. Julia and I are going to talk with Lisa Guerrero of Inside Edition. And Lisa, of course, she's awesome. And you can catch her, by the way, on Twitter and Instagram at 4, the number 4, Lisa Guerrero. And Lisa is awesome, yes. And her interviews have been seen, some of them, by hundreds of millions of views on the internet. And she has been an investigative reporter for Inside Edition and just period for quite some time. And so, Lisa, thank you for joining the show. I'm Matthew. Julia Gray is sitting with me. Well, we're social distancing. She's sitting at her house.
Hi, Lisa.
How are you?
Hello, Julia. Hello. It's so good to be here. I'm doing well. So far, so good. Coronavirus free.
Yeah, okay. where are you good. At? Where are you at right now? What are you working on at the moment?
So I'm in Los Angeles, and I, typically I'm the show's investigative correspondent. So that means I am on a plane and out and about covering, crime and scam artists and crooked politicians. But in the last 2 weeks, we have not been traveling at all in terms of airplane travel, and all of our investigative resources have gone towards covering the coronavirus and different aspects of it. So I'm based in Los Angeles, And every day for the last 2 weeks, I have just been cranking out different stories about coronavirus. There, you know, our show's a national show. We're based out of New York, but mm-hmm. both of the buildings in New York had coronavirus positive tests.
Oh.
So they closed down our New York newsroom, which is huge, where the majority of Inside Edition's employees work, and they closed down our production studio, where Deborah Norville hosts the show from across the street in New York at CBS. So now we're doing the majority of our show with a skeleton crew out of the Los Angeles office. So it's crazy to do a national half-hour show every day with basically like 30 people.
Right.
And,
and for someone who travels and interviews people all the time and does all the work that you do, but it's usually like you can get your hands dirty with it all. Doing this from L.A., how's your job changed and what is your job right now, would you say? What are you currently working on and how are you working on it?
So that's a great question. Everything shifted to coronavirus because there are, you know, besides the fact that the news changes not daily but hourly on, you know, with new information about coronavirus and how it's affecting you, how it affects families, anxiety, businesses, small businesses, large businesses, you know, there's so much to cover just within that scope.
Sure.
So, you know, every day I'm covering one to three different stories on coronavirus. As an example, on yesterday's show, I covered two totally different angles. One was about expectant mothers that are no longer going to be able to give birth with their husbands or significant others in the room.
God, I heard that. Yeah.
Could you imagine?
That's crazy.
Heartbreaking stuff. But it's to keep them safe. It's to keep the new baby safe. It's to keep the doctor safe. But it's devastating for a lot of moms. In fact, one of my best friends is 37. She's pregnant. It was a surprise. They didn't try. And she's 7.5 months pregnant. And she is beside herself with fear because she's going to have to be alone while delivering the baby at 47 in the middle of a coronavirus pandemic. So we covered that. But then on the same show, I also covered gambling and sports bettors because now that sports has shut down. What are these bettors, you know, what are these degenerates gambling on? So we did kind of a fun story where that money's going because, you know, they still got the itch.
Yeah.
They still got the itch. So now they're gambling on, like, how many times Trump's going to tweet in one day.
Oh, my God.
Or, you know, who's going to make the next round of The Bachelor. Like, crazy stuff. People are ridiculous. So we cover serious stuff. But we also try to cover more lighthearted stuff and feel good stories because, I mean, you'll kill yourself if you just watch CNN and watch the death ticker on the right side of the TV.
Sure.
Right? You can't just be doom and gloom all the time. So we try to lighten it up a little bit while still delivering good information. So basically every day I'm, you know, going through the internet, going through social media, looking at traditional papers and traditional news outlets to try to find interesting angles for the coronavirus coverage.
Well, first off, I thought I read, and since you reported on it, so you may know this, I heard they're buying up a bunch of iPads at the hospitals so you can, if you're giving birth, the best you can do is basically FaceTime your husband or your expectant father, the expectant father.
Oh,
you FaceTime them. Is that, did you hear that at all?
Yeah, I did hear that. You know what it's called? They called it telebirthing.
Wow.
I know. It's a lot. I think the concern is, And again, you know, you always want to err on the side of caution and making sure that people stay safe and healthy and try not to spread the coronavirus. You know, so I think that it's the instinct that the healthcare system has is, you know, let the fewest amount of people, you know, in the rooms for the procedures as possible. I mean, that just makes perfect sense. But it's also heartbreaking because for a lot of families, that's the most significant memory that they have. Their first and most significant for a lot of couples is delivering their baby together.
Yeah, that's awful. Julia, what are you taking away from all this? We got degenerate gamblers now betting on Donald Trump.
I love it. Degenerate gamblers. And we've got these funny, people who are posting, like that woman from the South Side of Chicago who did that rant about people who aren't social distancing and aren't washing their hands. It's absolutely hilarious. You're getting all that, which is kind of fun. This is one thing, because I also used to work in the news, and I worked in radio broadcast and some print. So I've never had anything like of this, magnitude. But, it's the one thing that is so fascinating, and I'm sure you know this about social media, is that anybody who has an iPhone or any kind of, smartphone can do their own little news stories, stuff that they see. So, you're seeing like some sort of citizen journalism, or a lot of the gotcha stuff, like, oh, this person sneezed on my food, and it's silly, not silly stuff, but serious stuff like that. I think it's the coverage that I've seen. I've been paying a lot of attention to local stuff since we're in Chicago. There's a lot of great local, coverage, because, I'm sure the same thing in Los Angeles too. Lots of smaller publications and online publications that are doing great micro local, reporting of things, of little stories about people or agencies or groups of people who are helping out the community. And then also, of course, like I said, pointing out bad behavior. So it's pretty, the degenerate gambler thing just killed me, though. I'm not surprised.
I mean, it's just proof.
The coronavirus is not going to stop people from their bad habits.
No.
I mean, if you were an alcoholic before, you're hitting the bottle like nobody's business right now. So, this crisis brings out the worst or the best in people. That's it.
Right. It's like, I want to know how are the drug dealers doing? Seriously, I was thinking about that today. It's like, okay, there are not a lot of people out on the streets. And of course, I know people are going to get their fix no matter what. But it was I'm curious to know how, like, the local crack dealers, is that those people are doing. It's amazing how this is going to just all aspects of society. And those who are, are trying to stay off the grid, how they're going to get nailed by this.
Yeah. You mentioned citizen journalism. And, I've been talking about this for years, that, I depend on my viewers to give me tips for a lot of things. And because we're television, we're video driven. So I'm constantly asking people to take out their phones, put it in the horizontal position, and then shoot while I'm doing. If you see something crazy, shoot it, send it to me. I could use it. And I probably 20 to 30% of my stories come from tips that I get. And we are all responsible for taking care of each other and for taking care of our neighbors. And one way to be able to control your environment is to be a citizen journalist. And because we're all on social media, we all have a platform to post it. So post it, I think it's good. And plus it's cathartic, because you feel like if you see something wrong, nobody else saw it, and so they got away with it. And there's a sense of injustice about that. And so I feel like, I'm going to shoot it, and then I'm going to put it, even if you have 50 followers, you're like, yeah, I showed them. So there's a sense of injustice that people feel frustrated with. But now that we have these computers, these cameras in our phones, we can be creators, we can be artists, we can be journalists. I get so frustrated when I hear people say things like, oh, I always wanted to write a book. Oh, I have that screenplay, I never finished it. You know what? Now's the time. So you've got to look at the silver lining and use your phone, use a pen and paper, use FaceTime, use the things that you have at hand right now to create art and to journal about this. We are living through history.
My question is, now you're talking about people that want to do art projects and such. Lisa's famously married to one of my favorite ball players of all time, Scott Erickson. Sorry about that. Yes. But my question is, he's retired.
We're still best friends. We're still really good friends. Yeah.
He's retired. And like, there's a lot of retired people going through this right now. And let's forget that, you know, it's the retired community that we're having to look out for the most. But people like my mother, and then the reason I brought up Scott and some other people is they're bored. I have to, like, force my mom to stay in the house. She would love to go out and just hop around from store to store. Have you talked to many people? Have you found a way to, like, keep these people in the house? Like, what are they doing with their time?
Yeah, you know what? There is – I'm so glad you brought that up, dude, because there is a great article that was just printed in the New York Times from an astronaut who spent like a year in space. And he wrote about the fact that, you know, it's easy to get bored, but he wrote a list of things you can do to make sure that you stay on a schedule and that you stay focused and you have accomplishments and you go through a list every day. You get up and you get dressed.
Yeah.
You hang around in your robe all day or your sweat scratching your belly. you know what I'm saying?
Nice.
Yes.
You get up, you get dressed, you wash your face. You're not an animal. You wake up, you're a human being. You eat something healthy. You accomplish things every day, you know, because it's easy to feel isolated and it's easy to feel bored.
Yeah.
But I mean, Anne Frank was hidden in an attic for months by herself and, you know, couldn't make any noise. So, I mean, I think what we're being asked to do right now is a small sacrifice so that you don't kill grandpa.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just kind of ridiculous when people, you know, I get that people are bored. I get it. But there's so much. We have technology. We have Inside Edition. You have Netflix.
Yeah.
You know, you have pornography. There are things you can do.
Oh, I saw that.
Speaking of pornography, Pornhub is
Did you
free.
See that? Yeah, not only is it free, not only is it free, but I saw an article that it's gone up 6% every day in viewership.
Awesome.
Wow.
Smut business.
Well, it's always the silver lining.
It's always, it's a recession-proof business. by the way, I wanted to bring up something that I wanted to give kudos to Lisa to, is if you go to 4 Lisa Guerrero, that's the number 4 Lisa Guerrero on Twitter, she is not just posting stuff about her stories. Like, it is literally like going to a one-stop shop for what's going on in the world. So I just wanted to give you kudos to that, Lisa, because you're not only promoting yourself, you do a really good job of getting information out there, period. And it's a really great, great, easy thing to do. Just go on Twitter, go to 4 Lisa Guerrero, and there you go. You pretty much have your news for the day. So, yeah, I wanted to give you kudos for that.
Yeah, I'm following you now. I just found you. Yay.
Yeah. Those are so nice. Thank you. You know what? I feel like I'm a news junkie, like, you know, like a lot of people are, Julia. You know, we're in the business. And I feel like, you know, it's part of my responsibility if I have a platform to share as much information as possible.
Yeah.
And look, people, there's certain things you notice, right? That people will click on pictures or people will click on videos and before they'll click on a lot of news. But, you know, I'm a political junkie. I'm a news junkie. I try to share as much information as I can. I try to stay away from a lot of, because right now, one of the things you're seeing is a lot of fake news. You know, they call it fake news. Mm. But there's a lot of misinformation
actual fake
out
news.
There.
Yeah, there is.
So, you know, and I worry about that. And you've got these, you know, the political back and forth where, you know, you've got the Republicans who you know, want to, hey, get back out there. Let's get the economy back on our feet, you know, by Easter. And then the scientific community going, whoa, you know, slow your roll, dude. You know, this is going to take more than a week or two to get through this. So I'm trying to post things that are science-based, that are factual, and that aren't about political propaganda.
Now, Lisa, and it's great. And Lisa, you've been covering.
And that's your responsibility, as you know.
Yes. She's been covering, though. No. That's great. What I wanted to bring up, though, is Lisa, you've been covering Donald Trump your whole career. You know, Inside Edition, of course, was like, even before Donald was president, there was always stories about Donald Trump. He was always a news magnet. What have you found has been how do you cover Donald Trump? Even as far back as before he was president, is there a way to handle him, deal with him? Like, what have you found was, what is so difficult about reporters dealing with Donald Trump?
So one of the things that I've noticed, that there's a trend, because, for example, the White House correspondents that have to cover that beat every day and, you know, have to deal with his staff and his administration and, you know, in fear of losing their press pass.
Yeah.
We've seen, you know, journalists get kicked out of pressers. And, you know, so I think that they have a really difficult job, right, because they have to be able to go in and ask questions. And they want to hold him to account. But at the same time, you know, I think there's a certain amount of pressure to be above the kind of the rhetoric and just ask factual questions. And you can't control what he says. Mm-mm. Here's what we've learned, right? You can't control what he says or how he responds. All you can control is your questions to him. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think you owe your audience. And this is why I say it's not just about Donald Trump. It's everything I cover. I think my obligation is to be the conduit from the audience to the subject. So I'm going to try to ask the questions that I think the people at home would ask if they had the privilege of holding that microphone, because it's a privilege, it's an honor. And so you're representing, not yourself, a huge group of people, right? So I always think of it in terms of what do they want me to ask. Now, when I do my investigations and I you know, confront a lot of bad guys, a lot of criminals, a lot of like scumbags, in some cases, I sometimes ask tough questions of people that aren't very nice. I can't help it if they run away from me, try to push me down, hit me with a car, pull out a gun. Like, I can't control what they do, but I can control what I do. So I'm always going to try to ask the most logical question, and I'm going to listen carefully to the answer, and then I'm going to ask a follow-up. And that's my obligation. So it's difficult, even no matter how difficult the subject is, you have to maintain your own integrity and your own cool, calm, collected self.
Yeah.
Like, that's all you can do. And you owe that to the viewer.
Have you ever felt in danger covering a story? You bring that up and you have covered like the John Gottis of the world. Have you ever felt like, boy, I'm crossing a potential line here?
Every day, because I don't cover sports anyway. I used to be a sportscaster, and I would go into the locker rooms and do that stuff, and that was fun. It's like the candy store. Now I cover criminals. And so there's always that element. I have, when I said guns pulled on me, I have actually had guns pulled on me. When I said I was hit by a car, I have been hit by a car.
Jeez.
I get death threats and rape threats constantly on social media from members of somebody's family that I, you know, exposed. So that's a constant. And even right now, I'm out and about in the community doing stories about the coronavirus during a time when they say to stay inside and stay safe. So, but my job is to go out and cover stories. And my job as investigative reporter is to ask tough questions of people that, you know, have been accused of doing some bad things. So that's part of the job. The thing that's also the best part of the job to me, because I love holding people to account. Journalism should be about accountability, and you can't have accountability in a studio from behind an anchor desk. You have to go out, you have to have boots on the ground, and you have to be there in person asking tough questions.
Yeah.
And that is that there's an inherent danger to that.
There's a mutual friend you and I have in common who I'll tell you in a second, but I wanted to say there's a famous Lisa Guerrero quip about this person that I'm going to verify is 100% true. You worked with Tom Arnold for a while, and Tom starred in my last film. And Tom is a friend of mine, and I love Tom, but he knows this is true. And Lisa once said about how Tom would spend more time in hair and makeup than Lisa would. This is 1,000% true. This is 1,000% accurate.
It is true. It's 100% accurate. And let me tell you something. Half that time was not people probably putting hair and makeup on him.
No.
It was him flirting with the hair and makeup people. Yeah. So
Tom likes to...
He's such a character, and I adore him so much.
Tom's a talker.
I love every bit of working with him.
Yeah.
But he was a big pain in the ass.
Yeah, Tom's a talker. And what Lisa means by that, because I totally get this too, and I'm sure she'll agree, to wrangle Tom is a job in itself. to be like, hey, Tom, you need to be prepared. You need to be ready. You need to be on set. You need to stop talking with the gaffer and the PA person and the makeup girl. Like, it is a job in itself.
It's true. Matt, so true. Well, we used to work together on a show called The Best Damn Sports Show.
That's
period,
right.
On Fox Sports Net. Mm-hmm. And I was the only mm-hmm. girl. And it was Tom Arnold, Chris Rose, mm-hmm. John Sally, John Kruk, Michael Irvin. So it was a bunch of dudes. So it was a bunch of ex-athletes,
yeah.
Tom and me. And it's a two-hour live show, to a studio, live studio audience, 2 hours every day. And we had, actors come in and superstar athletes as guests. And we're always doing comedy sketches but covering real sports. So it was a real blend of sports and entertainment. But you really get to know somebody. The first girl on that show for the first two seasons.
Oh.
And then I went on to do Monday Night Football after that.
Oh my
gosh. But to do live TV, live comedy, live sports in front of an audience with a 3 hour prep window every single day, you really get to know somebody. And, I got to know him really well. I went to, I think, his third wedding.
Yeah.
And we became friends. But today, we're still great friends. We just had dinner recently.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I adore such a talented man. But
yes.
Man, those were fun times.
He's what we call in the Midwest, he's a character. We love Tom. He's a character. I was just talking to Ty Ma the other day, the famous actor Ty Ma, who's fantastic. He was in The Farewell, which everyone should see. Great movie. Mm. And we were talking about how you were just talking about how much testosterone with Monday Night Football and The Best Damn Sports Show. There is a huge difference between working with a dominated male set and a dominated female set. And you would know better than anybody. So for you as a reporter, as someone who covers the news, what's the difference for you between working with a lot of men and a lot of women?
So at the same time that I started my sportscasting career in Los Angeles at CBS, I was also on a soap opera called Sunset Beach because I was an actress and broadcaster. So Monday through Friday, I played a villainess called Francesca Vargas on Sunset Beach on NBC. And on the weekends, Saturdays and Sundays, I was a sportscaster for CBS. So I was in a very female-dominated world with a soap opera Monday through Friday. And then I'm thrown into this very male-dominated, live sports world on the news. And I personally enjoy working with men. I love sports. First of all, I'm a huge sports fan, so it was kind of fun to be covering the Dodgers and the Lakers and UCLA hoops and USC football and all the, it was like fun. It was like I said, it was going to a candy shop. I love the testosterone of working with men. I was raised by a father and I have a brother. My mom died when I was little. So for me, I'm really comfortable in a male-dominated place. And now I'm doing investigative journalism and that's male-dominated as well. And I work with all male producers. So I think that's more comfortable for me.
Well, that's good. We have some great questions coming in. Pat Tobias, our producer, has some questions for you as well. This one, I wish I could ask myself. This is really good. Trump is on TV every day saying he'd give himself an A+, a 10 out of 10 for his handling of the crisis, saying they got a handle on things and anyone who wants a test can get a test. But we're curious, Lisa, what you're hearing on the front lines from other journalists, other people that know the situation. Do they think the government is handling the coronavirus situation as well as Donald does?
No. What most people think, and I'll speak for a swath of people that I know and that I listen to and that I follow and that I talk to, is that we're watching Governor Cuomo,
mm-hmm.
and we're seeing what Andrew Cuomo is doing, and we're saying that's what leadership is. He's giving really tough information on a daily basis. His presser every morning is a couple of hours long. It's very specific. It gives facts. He deals in science and facts. And whether you like to hear this or not, he's going to tell you how he feels. And I think that I would give Andrew Cuomo the A. that's who I'd give the A to.
Yeah. I think that's that would be my opinion on it as well. And I know Julia probably concurs with that.
Oh yeah, he's the only one. It's like our governor too in Illinois, and I know this of Gavin Newsom as well. Our governor J.B. Pritzker is the same thing. I mean, and our mayor of Chicago is also very reasoned and has facts and has stuff to back it up.
And she's not
taking any BS. And so Newsom and Pritzker are all just there's and Inslee also in Washington.
Oh, Jay Inslee's great.
Very, very, very smart. Very just like this is the facts. This is what's happening. This is what we need. We're in a dire situation. No more bullshit. You know, that kind of thing. So it's Cuomo, because it's the largest city in the state and the financial center of the world. Absolutely. I mean, it's pretty refreshing to watch his news conferences because he knows what he's talking about. And he listens to people.
Yeah.
He listens to the experts, is what I mean.
It's what we said before, you know, this crisis brings out the best or the worst of people. And it doesn't change who you are. It just magnifies who you are.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Trump was talking about yesterday, and I know Dr. Fauci said, I read something very funny about this. I thought it was funny. Maybe I'm going crazy in my quarantine, but Donald was talking about how in 2.5 weeks he's going to have the country up and running again. But he did admit, he goes, that's my opinion. Not everybody else's. It's my opinion. And then on the side, someone interviewed Dr. Fauci, and he goes, I advised the president to be very flexible with that date. And I'm like, that's funny. Because there's no chance 2.5 weeks, right, Lisa?
No chance.
Okay. Yeah. None.
No, I mean, nobody has a crystal ball. Like nobody can tell you when this is going to be over. But I mean, I think all you have to do is understand how math works to see where the numbers are going and to understand that we haven't reached the peak of this crisis yet. So it's, you know, I can't imagine what kind of miracle they think is going to happen where suddenly this won't spread. And for example, here in Los Angeles, they just closed down the Malibu beaches today. They closed down parts of Santa Monica. They closed down Runyon Canyon. Yeah. They closed down a lot of places that were optional to go to, but they said they had to stop it today because people were still going out and not being, you know, socially distant. They were still, you know, clustering together at a lot of these areas. And so until and unless that stops, you know, it's going to continue to spread. So, no, I don't think it's going to be
and
quite
sure. And we just had that at the lakefront today. We had, I was telling Julia, it's 50, 55 degrees, which is like summer in Chicago. So everyone went, and Mayor Lightfoot's like, okay, guys, I'm probably going to have to shut these things down because you're not listening.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're now ticketing people.
That's why you can't have nice things. That's why.
You can't have nice things. That's right.
You cannot, no.
So we're going to say we're a little more cautious than optimistic about 2.5 weeks. Okay, but you two are smarter than I am. I'm a smart guy, but I feel like you two are smarter. So help me with this though. And I tried to talk to my mother about this morning. I couldn't wrap my mind around it. Why even say 2.5 weeks? Why even get people's hopes up when there's a 100% chance that's not happening?
Three words. The stock market.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also
to one audience.
Yeah.
With that.
Exactly. And also he's also speaking to his evangelical base by saying, you know, that's when Easter is.
And, Easter.
You know, Easter is coming up and
I want the church's pet.
It'll all, you know, I'll be the savior, so to speak. Though he's about as Christian as a table leg. I think that might be the stock market definitely. And you know, since he hasn't really distanced himself from his businesses.
Well, and the follow-up about the stock market,
though. That's first and foremost thought.
But to follow up about the stock market, then you have like Dan Patrick and Glenn Beck who are saying people over 60 and seniors, they should be willing to sacrifice themselves to keep the country running and keep the stock market, you know, running and keep the what's your take on that, Lisa? I mean, I can't imagine.
Yeah, they
imagine...
should volunteer first.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure a local hospital would be super happy if they volunteered to take out the trash to the hospital bin.
You know, first, Glenn.
We've got people that are putting their lives on the line right now to save people, and these clowns are talking about sacrificing our senior citizens. It's just, it's beyond disgusting. It's appalling. And, someday books will be written, movies will be written about this period of time.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, a lot of people are going to say, how did this happen? How did you let this happen? How come you let these people hurt other people? The most vulnerable people are being hurt.
Yeah.
And if we continue with this kind of rhetoric, people will actually die.
Yeah.
People are dying, and more people will die unless we focus on the people whose needs need to be met, you know, and that's typically the most vulnerable, poorest people.
Yeah, absolutely.
The elderly.
Absolutely. And I think people forget that people over the age of 50 in this country, that is the people with the most amount of money in this country. Like, you don't want them to die. we're going to need them to get the economy started again once this is over. It just makes no sense to me why you would even say that. Which leads me then to Trump's approval rating is just as good as the day he got in office, and his approval rating on the coronavirus, 60% of Americans, according to a Gallup poll, or I believe the Monmouth University poll, I forget which one, say he's doing a great job at this. They feel like he's stepped up. You are all around the country. You talk to all kinds of people, Lisa. You talk to journalists. You talk to regular citizens. Joe Biden, does he stand a chance against Donald Trump in this election?
Yes, and so you have to look at this in historical context as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
And it's difficult to do because this kind of crisis is different than other kinds of crises. However, whenever there is a major crisis like this, typically popularity of the sitting president goes up over the first 7 to 14 days in polls. So if there's a war, if there's a
George Bush
attack,
with 9/11,
people seem to band together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pardon me?
Oh, I said George Bush with 9/11. At one point, he had almost a 90% approval rating.
Exactly. And Americans tend to rally around the flag in times of crisis, and that means the presidency. What happens, though, is in the next month to 2 months, you see a reality setting in as you see more facts come in about the impact of that crisis and how it affects people. And that's when you see the reality of how people really feel in the long run. So don't look at this particular poll right now, because it happens every time there's a crisis.
Yeah.
What you want to be thinking about and concentrating on really is what's going to be happening in 2 months. If we're really headed towards a depression, if this crisis continues to take more and more lives, then people are going to be thinking very differently about this administration in 2 months. But again, just look back on history. This happens every time.
Now,
you're
on the front lines, and I'm sure you at least even get the gossip. So Bernie Sanders, when's he going to give it up? When's he going to help out the Democratic Party and support Joe Biden?
So this is a really difficult one because, again, you go back. Whenever I am confounded about something, I try to look back on what history tells me about that same person or something similar in terms of a crisis or, a pattern. So I look for patterns. If you look back at Bernie Sanders, this is who that dude is.
Yeah.
This guy is not the guy to bow out gracefully and say, I'm going to rally behind Joe because he's our only shot at defeating Trump. You know, he's done this before.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's interesting about this is that if you you know, if you look back at history and you go, okay, what's the best way to have potentially defeated Trump last time? It would have been for Bernie to have supported Hillary earlier on, yeah. But it just, that didn't happen. So why would that dude change 4 years later?
Yeah.
Now he feels like he's even more popular. He won the first two caucuses. So he feels empowered now. So I think everybody understands that we're living through this historical period. And I think a lot of folks, maybe rightly so, just want to see where the cards fall for the next few weeks before they make any big decisions. I think one interesting component is going to be who Joe Biden picks as a running mate.
Yeah.
And who, if anybody, Elizabeth Warren decides to throw her weight behind. So, you know, it's not just going to be about Bernie. It's going to be about, it would be incredible if Joe Biden picked somebody as his running mate that people felt would make a huge difference in their lives. Now, he's already committed to selecting a woman, right? He said that in the debate. Yeah. If he hadn't said that, and he said, I'm going to pick Andrew Cuomo, as my running mate, there's a big swath of people right now at this time in history that would go, oh, my gosh, I love that idea. So you just, I think a lot of people are just waiting to see how this plays out and waiting to see who he picks as his running mate and a couple of other components.
Well, you know, your most famous story probably ever was, at least in terms of views on the internet, you had a 500 million plus views when you interviewed Kenneth Copeland. And I have to imagine that went two ways for you. You had a lot of people that supported you, and then I'm sure you also had supporters of his and supporters of the faith that probably came after you. Now, during this point in time, I believe I would be shocked to learn not to learn that these preachers, these preachers for profit, if you will, are making money off of this situation. Is that a story you may want to follow up on or look into at some point?
We did. We did this story. So at the end of last week, we took part of my original, in fact, that was the second investigation I had done on Kenneth Copeland through the years.
Yeah.
But this most recent one where I was asking him about using his donors' money to buy a private jet. And I had an unscheduled interview with him outside of one of his events in Branson, Missouri last year. And that's the one where, you know, he was very upset with me, but then a minute later he's flirting with me and calling me beautiful. And then he's screaming at me and pointing in my face. So the whole interview was quite something to see, but we decided to take a piece of that and re-air it because he recently said that he could cure you and protect you from the coronavirus through the TV. And so he was actually healing people through the television. And he also then said, you know, don't stop, you know, even if you lose your job, don't stop tithing to me, you know, to your church, and don't stop giving to the church, even if you don't have a job. So he's been in the midst of a little bit of controversy recently. Alex Jones, James Baker, like a few other, Jim Baker, a few other personalities on TV have been selling, you know, snake oil because of the coronavirus, trying to say, you know, if you drink this, you won't get coronavirus. If you use this bleach, you won't get coronavirus. Oh. And so they're selling it, you know, as if, you know, it's God has blessed them. And you know, if you give to me, this will keep you from getting sick. So we did do a story on that the other day.
What? And while we're talking about God and God giving people blessings, is the owners of Hobby Lobby have decided to stay open because the Lord supposedly spoke to the wife of the man who owns, I forget their names, who own Hobby Lobby, to keep the store open. Keep all those
and
stores
he said,
open. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, he actually said, you know, just tighten your belts and save money. And, you know, we want to keep these stores open. And, I mean, meanwhile, he is, you know, a billionaire.
Right.
You know, he's putting his employees at risk. He's putting his customers at risk. But there are certain parts of the country that just aren't taking it as seriously because they don't know anybody that has it yet. And this is what typically happens, right? You say, well, it's not going to affect me. And, you know, I'm young and I'm healthy and I don't know anybody that has it. And then suddenly 3 or 4 days later, you've heard of somebody that has it. And then 2 weeks later, you've heard of somebody that died from it. And 4 or 5 weeks later, that somebody that died from it is somebody in your family. So it's like a slow roll, but we're still living in kind of the beginning of this crisis where a lot of people don't feel a personal impact yet.
Yeah.
And Hobby Lobby appeals to certain parts of rural America, the South, the Midwest, that maybe feel like, oh, this is only happening in New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles and Washington State. It's not here in Tennessee. You know, so they kind of feel like they're immune from it, or invincible. And so why can't they go to their arts and crafts store and pick up their fabric?
Right.
You know, so it's interesting, but it's, you know, it's just a matter of time, sadly, until those people start to understand the impact of it, because it's going to impact them.
And Lisa, what would you say to all these people? Because I love how you speak in fact. I love how you speak in knowledge. It's not even opinion with you. It's like, here's the facts. What would you say to these people that say this disease isn't really affecting many people, isn't killing anybody? It's just worse than the flu. It's a little worse than the flu. What is your response when you see this on Facebook and Twitter and people bring this up? The deniers.
So, you know, yeah, the deniers. I think the thing that I always try to get back to is, don't take it from me. You know, I'm just a journalist, and we know that a lot of people think that the press is your enemy. I would say all you have to do is Google the facts about it. And I think that a lot of our platforms are doing a really good job. For example, on Twitter, there's a link that says coronavirus facts or COVID-19 facts.
Yeah.
And you can link to just the scientific information about it. If you don't believe me, believe Tony Fauci. You know, believe the World Health Organization, the CDC, your local and state leaders and politicians that want you to be healthy and want the economy to be humming along, but still, more importantly, they want you to be alive. So don't believe me, but here are links to facts. So, I mean, if you arm yourself with facts and science, then it's really hard to argue with that. And sure, there's some people that are just going to ignore it. They're going to go out to the beach and party on Fort Lauderdale's beaches and swap spit. It doesn't matter to a lot of people. But to other people, I think you just keep relentlessly pounding them with information, and eventually it gets through. But sadly, it's going to take somebody losing someone before it hits home.
Yeah, and I want to end on a fun note. But before I end on the fun note, I did want to tie together when I was talking to Ty Ma the other day, and now is we were talking about the racism that has been caused from the coronavirus. Of course, Donald Trump famously calls it the Chinese virus. I saw a conspiracy theory the other day that many people on Reddit were upvoting and getting behind, talking about how China gave the world this virus, but they didn't give it to Russia and they didn't give it to someone else. I forget who the other country was. Only their allies they didn't give it to. And now China's going to buy back the economy. I mean, I don't even want to give this credence by explaining this. This is just so stupid. But how do we respond to these racist attacks that are coming out of this?
Well, you know, that's just like a huge, like we could do a whole show on just that.
Yeah.
You know, first and foremost, when people call it the Chinese virus, that is racist. And when people go, oh, but we called it the Spanish flu, that was different. That flu did not originate in Spain. Spain had a free press at the time, and so they were the ones that were reporting on this flu, so that's why it became the Spanish flu. It didn't originate in Spain. So there's a lot of people that are just refuse to look at facts, and they want to see a conspiracy in everything. You know, you can say the sky is blue, and they'll go, oh, no, it's actually magenta. But because of the ozone layer caused by an alien that landed in Venus, it appears to be blue to us because we're not really seeing what it is. It's actually magenta. Don't you know that, you idiot? So there's always people out there pumping these crazy conspiracy theories. And that's not going to stop. You know, people are always...
Yeah, you're not going to get to those people.
So don't waste the lifeboat on them. Just don't do it. Don't, you know, you have your circle, you have your platform, and we're all responsible on our own social media platforms to try to get out there, humor, real facts, information, real news, some snark. Snark is fun. We love snark. Do it. Be fun, you know. Shoot yourself, you know, doing a shot of Jack at the end of the night if you want to. It's okay. It's okay, however we handle it. But what we shouldn't be doing is sharing things that are racist and hurtful and that will get people killed. We really should shy away from that.
Yeah, and I also want to encourage people, because it's more of an opinionated thing, so I don't want Lisa to have to give her opinion on this if she doesn't want to, but the stimulus bill that came out yesterday, Andrew Cuomo is saying it is terrible for New York. It's supposedly supposed to be terrible for Chicago and Los Angeles. So I hope people read into it.
You're kind of cutting out.
Oh, I'm...
You're kind of cutting it out.
Am I there? Do you hear me?
There, I hear you now.
Okay, so I was talking about...
I didn't hear your question.
Oh, I was talking about, I just want people to do their reading, read up on the stimulus package that has come out, because Andrew Cuomo and Chicago and L.A., we're all saying this is not a good package for us. It doesn't really help us as much as it should. I wish people would look into that and read up on it, because I see a lot of people fighting over it on Twitter and Facebook, but they don't seem to know the details and the facts. It's more of, I'm on the blue team, I'm on the red team. And I think people should read that and definitely know what the stimulus package is, because it's, we basically gave the... It was Steve Mnuchin, and we gave them the ability to let the airlines once again buy back their stocks. That's one thing. I don't believe there's anything in it about student debt. I didn't read anything in it about student debt. All that hype, all that talk about it, I don't believe there was one thing in it about that. There's no pause on a nationwide end of credit cards or mortgages or rent, I believe. I mean, Lisa, you could correct me if I'm wrong about any of this, but it, from what I understand, it definitely, once again, helps out the corporations a little more than the little people.
Right. Well, I haven't read it yet, so I'm going to just distance myself from that until I read the entire thing, because I don't want to make a judgment on something I haven't read in full yet and really have a comfortable understanding of all the facts. I know that, you know, in every single package, and again, I think we shouldn't call it a stimulus package. Mm-hmm. We should call it a relief package, because it's not going to stimulate the economy. It's just going to get people like a safety net that they need. So once I read it and get familiar with the facts, and I would love to comment about that, but I want to read it first. And again, every single time something like this happens, there are huge compromises. So if neither side is 100% happy, then it's probably kind of close to where it should be. But there are, you know, there is the knee-jerk reaction is to side with your team always. And that's very natural. And to try to put things in there that are political, that's also natural. But I think right now we're living in a time when people just don't have time for any shenanigans right now. They just want to get a paycheck. And if it's $1,200, or if it's $500 a child, or if it's going to stop me from having to pay rent for 3 months, if it's going to forgive some loans, and then that's what people want right now. And I think even if it allows the corporations off the hook to some degree, even if there is some transparency, I think overall a lot of people are going to go, just give me a check.
Yes. Yeah, probably. Before I let Lisa go, I'm going to leave with, I want her to tell one story, but once again, you can follow Lisa on Instagram and Twitter at 4, Lisa Guerrero, 4, Lisa Guerrero on Twitter and on Instagram. Lisa, you've all of a sudden become a country music superstar. Do you want to explain to me how you went from soap actress to sports reporter to investigative journalist, and now you are a country music star? What What? How? Talk to me.
I know it sounds ridiculous. Okay, so here's the short version.
Yeah.
10 years ago, I was at a charity event with a bunch of country music artists, and I know nothing about country music. Not a fan. I'm a punk rock fan, classic rock, alt rock. I did not know anything about country. And so I was teasing these guys, saying, how hard can it be to write a country music song? My dog, my wife, blah, 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 blah. And so I was giving these guys a hard time. And little did I know that these are like Grammy winners and superstar producers. And they were insulted, of course. But I had had a glass of wine or three. And so I didn't care. I was giving them a hard time. And somebody said to me, I'll bet you $20 that you can't write a country music song. So the next day, the guys all played in a golf tournament. And I went back to my hotel and I wrote what I thought was a country music song called Everybody Loves a Comeback. And it was about people making a comeback in their lives, either coming back from a job loss, coming back from a career. At the time, I was married to Scott Erickson. So it was about an older baseball player making a comeback in his career. So it was all, every verse was about making a comeback. So I, and if everybody loves a comeback, then why can't I come back home? That was my hook.
Wow.
So I turned it in that night to the country music artist guy, and he couldn't believe I wrote it. First of all, he didn't believe I did. And Scott, my husband at the time, said, yes, she did. She writes. And so he handed it to this guy named Keith Burns, who was just nominated for a Grammy with a band called Trick Pony. And Keith said, I love this. Can I take it home and work on it? So a couple weeks later, he sent me my lyrics put to music, and I just about fainted because it was beautiful. He made it into a ballad. So that was 10 years ago. Last year, I looked him up out of nowhere because I was starting my own YouTube channel called Lisa Guerrero TV, and I wanted content for my own YouTube channel. And I said, hey, you know, I wonder if I could ever do this song for reals. So I called Keith. He remembered me. He was working with a superstar producer named James Stroud, who's produced everybody from Ike and Tina Turner to Faith Hill and Tim McGraw. He heard the song. He goes, I want to produce the song. And 2 days later, I'm on a flight to Nashville. He's producing my song. I sing back up in this song. It's called Everybody Loves a Comeback. Keith Burns mm-hmm. sings the lead. Presley and Taylor, which is a sister act, they sing back up with me. And it's been climbing the charts. So
wow.
You can download it. And we made it into a military love song.
Yeah.
So it's about a soldier that goes off to Afghanistan, but he wants to come back home. So so that's it. And so the proceeds of the song, my part of the proceeds go to a journalism scholarship fund, and Keith's part of the proceeds go to Folds of Honor. So that's our
wow.
song. So check it out. It's really fun, and it's climbing the charts right now, and it's crazy. Like, who knew? Now I'm a country fan.
Lisa, you are the coolest. I am so glad we had a chance to do this. I hope you're able to do it again
Absolutely.
Sometime. I had a blast. I mean,
I'd love to anytime, Matt and Julia. Thank you.
Thank you so
You're
much.
Welcome.
You
this
can
is fun.
And you can get Lisa's song Everybody Loves a Comeback. It's on iTunes, Apple Music, Amazon, Spotify, Google. It's even on your YouTube channel, I think, at Lisa Guerrero TV.
Yep.
And then of course you can follow her on Twitter, Instagram at 4 Lisa Guerrero, the number 4 Lisa Guerrero. Lisa, thank you so much. You can see her on Inside Edition also every week. You syndicated everywhere. So thank you so, so much.
Thanks, guys. Thank you for having me. And stay safe. Wash
thank
your hands,
you.
People. Wash.
Thank
oh,
you, Lisa.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Julia, you still there?
Sure am.
Okay. I'm sorry if I kept you a little longer than expected, but I had such a good time talking to Lisa. That was
great. She
is
great.
Oh, my God. I mean, I knew she had to be smart, but, like, that smart, like, it was blowing my mind. I'm like, I need to not talk during this whole thing. No one wants to hear from me. She's like, well, if you go back in history, I'm like, she's a history major. She writes country music. She's a journalist in every field. Oh, so jealous.
I know. She has an awesome career.
I know. A totally awesome career. Julie, I want to thank you for coming on. Is there anything you want to promote or talk about before?
No, just... Just you know, I will let you know, of course, and you will have to come back to my podcast. But
yeah.
I do have some. I'll let everybody know. I'm trying to get some. You know, everybody's so it just wrapped up in the world of coronavirus right now, which I is par for the course. But you know, I do have some interesting guests coming up, but I will let you know. So
okay,
please,
great.
Listen to my podcast.
Unresting Bitch Face over at Patreon. Unresting Bitch Face. And if I got anybody I need someone smarter than me to come on and talk with, I'll be having Julia back on soon. So I don't have to worry when it's Tom Arnold. I can handle that. But you know, with the Lisa Guerreros of the world, I need to bring someone like Julia on to make sure I know my P's and Q's. So
you did a great job.
Oh, thanks. Well, you're great too. I love you. And everybody have a good weekend. And we will see you all next week with more quarantine podcasting. I didn't do this show for like, I mean, I did sporadically for like a year. I did like 10 episodes in the last year. I've done 10 episodes in 2 weeks. I'm doing it all for you people. I don't know why, but I'm bored. Julian, I love you. We'll see you all. Well, we won't see you. We won't see you. Social distance, people. But we will talk to you all very soon.
Yeah, definitely.
And vote Biden. Okay.
Okay.
Bye, everybody. Bye,
vote
Julia.
Vote Biden, exactly.
Bye, Julia.